Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Previously.tv Podcast Network.
Where were you first prepared to lead the temple?
In my heart.
And where was that heart tested?
In the field of battle.
What is the airspeed velocity of an unladen swallow?
What do you mean? An African or European swallow?
Huh? I don't know that.
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 181 for the week of December 4th, 2017. I am glowing clue gem David T. Cole, and I'm here with King Cuck III, Sarah D. Bunting.
Another headache? Sounds.
Holy Grail enthusiast Tara Ariano.
I'ma use it to eat a big ostrich egg.
And Helma Cam Jim Durr.
She turned me into a newt.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to a full normal episode of Extra Hot Great after a couple holiday specials. We are here this week with Jim Durr. Hello, Jim.
Hi Jim.
Yay!
You may know Jim from, I don't know, Kim being Kim's husband.
Nothing.
Before we get into this week's topic, I just want to take a quick moment to talk about some site business. Our recap campaign is almost over, just a few more days. I'm happy to report we have reached our goal of $27,000. Yay! So they
Thank
are
you
coming
to yes. everybody.
Thank you very much to all our backers. So the first recap is actually coming quite soon. That's going to be The Walking Dead. Yep. With Omar and M-Giant, Jeff Alexander, covering that one. And then the next one that will appear on the site will be The Crown with yep. the Fug Girls, Jessica and Heather, recapping that one.
Who will also be here with us next week on Extra Hot Great to talk about The Crown as well.
Yep. Of interest to you, our podcast listeners, is that we will be creating audio versions of the recaps. All under one roof, probably called, you know, the recap show or something like that. And the lineup will just change as our lineup changes. So it's not up yet, but it should be up soon. So keep an eye on social media or tune back in next week for information on how you can subscribe to those. And I think that's it, right?
Yep.
All right. Yep. Thanks again for everybody who backed the campaign. And we'll see you on the site for recaps and recap discussion soon. So this week, we are talking about History Channel's Nightfall. It's all about the Knights Templar and the search for the Holy Grail. And Jim is a Knights Templar, so we wanted to invite Jim this week.
You blew my cover, Dave.
Sorry. This is sort of in the vein of Vikings, probably their most popular show, I think, or at least their most successful sort of that ilk. What was everybody's first impression? Jim, let's start with you.
I was surprised, pleasantly surprised at how not cheap it looked, which is damning with faint praise, isn't it?
Yeah, it looked like they spent some money.
Yeah, yeah. like that, at least that first episode, like there were, you know, obviously CG cities and, but large crowds of people, like they spent some money on it.
And don't forget about the extreme helmet cam.
I loved helmet cam. Mostly because Game of Thrones pisses me off to no end every time they're north of the wall and no one's wearing a fucking hat. Yeah. What the fuck?
You should say you live north of the wall in Syracuse, so you know from cold weather.
Yeah, like you lose like 30% of your body heat from your ears, people. Come on.
That's right.
So can you describe Extreme Helmet Cam, Jim, for us?
At one point, the Knights Templar are all, you know, mounted up and armed and armored and charging into battle on their horses. And rather than what other shows might have done, have them, you know, ride into battle without helmets on, so that you could recognize, like, oh, that's, you know, that one guy that we've been introduced to, or that's, you know, his buddy or whatever. They have little, like, GoPros in the helmets that the men are yelling into, which is not a great look. But still better than just, like, if they had done it, like, no helmets, because that would have just been like, well, that's dumb. Who's going to do
that? You know what I'm really curious about that, though, is that, you know, because of lighting and everything, these guys were probably wearing half a helmet, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it must have been, like, and then just jumping.
Yeah.
You know, they were obviously not actually riding a horse. It was just a guy, yeah, in a room.
I would love to see the behind-the-scenes photos of those. It must look so ridiculous, because they just got to have, like, three-quarters of a helmet on, and mm-hmm. then the camera's, like, right in their face. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, at first I thought the one character was in, I think it's called a testugo, which the Romans used to do, which is, like, they just make a tortoise shape, and then mm-hmm. they put the shields all around, including on the top. You see it in Gladiator, actually. They shoot flaming arrows out of it. It's pretty rad. For someone who had to learn all these, like, Roman army terms for school, it was like, oh, do I get to use this? No. my first impression of the show, though, was that, like, this dialogue is going to get annoying fast, but I can't hate too hard on a show that brings the trebuchet in, like, minute two. I enjoy a trebuchet and a testugo.
So the series opens up. They're in Acre, and it's sort of like the last bit of the crusade when the Knights Templar and all the crusaders are getting pushed out of the Holy Land, and they sort of escape with the Holy Grail, and then a boat that is holding the Holy Grail, so we think, is sunk, and all the knights are, like, super sad because the Holy Grail's at the bottom of the ocean now and nobody can get to it. And then they're back in France, like, a decade later. And then, oh, my God, maybe the Grail is in France after all. Cue, you know, the Da Vinci Code and the Holy Grail, Holy Blood novels and all this sort of stuff about all the conspiracy about where the Holy Grail is. And that is sort of the premise of the show. The lead is one of the knights. His name is, I don't know, Martin. I don't even know his name. It's Landry.
Landry. I was quite disappointed that the Landry of Friday Night Lights / Crucifictorious was not playing this role. Because I think that crossover would have been pretty amazing.
Especially since it's so ripe for a Landry / Lance joke, like on Friday Night Lights, because they're knights. Anyway.
Yeah. So then the rest of the series is, you know, where's the Grail? And there's all these parties and sects and levels of society all sort of, like, struggling and vying for the Grail and power and all that sort of stuff. So it's not, you know, it's pretty typical for this sort of thing. The nice thing about this versus Vikings, or rather the better thing about Vikings versus this, is that just the whole I'm a pious man, I'm a warrior stuff is so boring. And Vikings just dispenses with that because the religion embraces, you know, the warrior side of things. The Landry character is so grating because he's just like, oh, I can't, I'm a Knights Templar, I shouldn't be sleeping with the king's wife, which he's doing, you know, like, grow a pair, be the warrior the show you needs you to be, and let's move on with it.
Or don't, because I don't really care. I mean, the thing that I kept bringing up is that the problem with doing a show about crusaders in the year 2017, when we know things about history and about treating people fairly and justly, is that they're really alighting a lot of the problematic stuff about religion. And is it in the first episode that we get a thing of, like, the Knights Templar defends everyone, even Jews? Like, do they though? Like,
yeah.
That seems very ahistorical to me.
Yeah.
And they're really, like, just soft soap all the, like, well, what were you all doing at Acre? Oh, killing Muslims? Got it. Like, that's not really highlighted either, even though we all know that that's the case. So it's like the difficulty in doing a show like this in our time, without being extremely offensive, is that you have to be extremely ahistorical. And so it's like, it's not going to really satisfy anyone, probably.
Yeah. I mean, the Knights Templar, by the time they got back to Europe, they were, like, you know, one of the richest organizations, you know, of the time. And if anything, the Jews would have been their tenants. Like, they own so much land by the time this show is started. Like, that would be the only justification for protecting them, is that they're protecting an investment, but that's not the way the show portrays it at all. The show is very, you know, they're doing it out of the goodness of their hearts, which, you know, probably not. They're a very pragmatic and sort of mercenary entity. So yeah, it's a little white. Well, it's a lot whitewashy.
Like the reason, Philip IV, the king of France at that time, you know, disbands or has the Templars arrested is because of money. But they don't, like, his character seems ahistorical, I guess, based on the things I know about, you know, King Philip IV. Not that I'm a Philip IV scholar. But like he and
you're a Philhead. We all know it.
For more information on Jim and his Phil, go to getyourphil.org.
And the portrayal of Pope Boniface, who sort of rolls in like, you know, just your kindly grandpa and is like, all, oh, why don't you get married for love? Like, who's this dude?
Yeah.
It's supposed to be in 1300, you know, with royalty. That seems ahistorical as well. And again, you know, Dante is, you know, colored my, you know, maybe he was a great guy, but. My first run-in with him was
I'll tell you
Dante
who that Pope is. It's Mr. Carson from Downton Abbey.
Mr. Carson from Downton Abbey.
Which, what? Sounding exactly like he sounds in Downton Abbey, by the way.
Yeah, not changing up his accent one tiny bit. The only thing he changes is his wig. He's got this, like, Marcelled affair going on when he takes off his Pope helmet.
Yeah. Yeah, this show, for me, is sort of the descendant of the 90s syndicated shows. They always would show Saturday afternoon, like Hercules and, you know, shows of that ilk.
Yeah.
But without any of the mitigating mirth of those, right? Like, this is kind of joyless. This, to me, if somebody told me this was written by screenwriters from Russia in tracksuits, I'd be like, that tracks. No pun intended. Because it's got this very sort of machismo overtone to it that is off-putting, right? And it's not like balanced by anything.
I'm sure that's courtesy of our executive producer Jeremy Renner.
Oh, we're right.
Oh god.
Who could not, unfortunately could not perform on the show due to scheduling conflicts.
Yeah, that's a heartbreaker.
Zero Dark 1300. Darn. Okay. Like it was fine. I wasn't like offended by how bad it was. I wasn't bored, but I also wasn't interested either. It walked this kind of amazing fine line of being a nothing that kind of fell out of my head immediately afterwards. I mean, look, that sword through the mouth shot was nasty and awesome.
Sure.
Yep. And that's kind of all I remember. Like, I didn't even take that many notes because what is there to say?
And that's saying something, just like that first episode, like things happen. Like, I don't watch that much television these days, but I felt like that was chocked full of things.
Yeah.
But it also sort of amounts to like, okay, and now they're in France. It was like, there's a siege and there's trebuchets and ships are exploding. Mm-hmm. There's a sword through the mouth and this guy's sleeping with the king's wife and the Jews. And it's like, oh my, like I need a break.
And there's an orange.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. Also an orange. And now that guy's
secret
run away.
Code
and,
orange. Yeah. Uh-huh. There's a scene, if you haven't watched, there's a scene where the lead character and his Templar master, they're walking through town and there's an orange sitting on some shelf somewhere
on like a
and
ledge.
The guy just like freaks out. He's like, oh my god, the old guy, like, oh no, the orange of certain doom or whatever going on. It was just like
it was 1300's equivalent of the bat signal,
orange gram. I was just gonna say that they also have to hang a lantern on how basically boring it is by having them be like, and the first thing that we see them do, the Knights Templar, when we cut to them in France 13 years after they think they lost the Holy Grail, spoiler alert, they semi didn't, but is they have a meeting, like we're like inside Templar towers and they're just like sitting around discussing like how to spend their money or not. And like even Landry, our lead, like is bitching to his girlfriend slash the queen of how bored he is. Like, yeah, got it. Like, why didn't we stay with you like before the battle? That might have been more interesting for all of us, but that was not the choice.
Yeah, and building off that and Sarah's point, which is like the reason this show doesn't stick with you is because there is not one character that you can care about in this show. And that is the biggest problem with this thing. Like the one character I think they want you to care about, which is Percival, which is this farmhand that gets sucked into the Templar conspiracy and world because of location. He is really annoying. He's not something you want to sympathize as somebody you want to sympathize with. So at the end of the day, there's like these jerky Templars, these shadowy assassin clan running around. There is the duplicitous king, his duplicitous wife. There is a guy I've been calling in my head Little Toe, which is basically he's like Littlefinger from Game of Thrones, but not nearly as effective. And, you know, it's just the royal court and everybody vying for control there. There's not like one person that you like. And that includes not one bad person you like either. Like, not that I think you need a good character with a pure heart. Even the villains of this piece are not compelling. And so when Sarah says the only part she remembered was the sword through the mouth, the only part I remember, and maybe this is their shtick, is like an episode later, a guy gets a crucifix through the mouth. You know, like it's like it's uninteresting characters, but really good through the mouth deaths is the legacy of Nightfall.
Yeah.
The other thing I want to say, and this is approaching car talk, but I'll just say it. It's not bad. But in the story, we're talking about the Jews are exiled from the city, and they all have patches on. I'm going to admit, my first thought was, why do they have bagel patches on them? That seems a little
anachronistic.
Yeah,
they shouldn't have the bagel patches until they moved to New York.
Fact.
So that was my Dave is so dumb guy moment watching Nightfall.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. Anyways, if this show came before Vikings, which is like superior on almost every level, including the amount of money they spend it, obviously, I would have understood. But this is like a step back for the History Channel and their efforts. If Vikings is off-season Game of Thrones, like this is off season Game of Thrones. This
except
is like,
that, yeah, right. I thought you were going to say off season Vikings, except they do air back to back on History. Yeah.
Well, and there was probably a way to do it if they kind of steered into the problematic parts and did more of a kaleidoscope of points of view. But I don't think they could afford that or just even wanted to open that suitcase, much less start unpacking it. So It's not that the subject matter isn't interesting. But these people, like Dave said, are not like, I don't care what happens to any of them. And I would still watch for like a good villain or some fun process. But like Robert's Rules of Medieval Order, don't care. I'm not going to storm out of the room if someone else is watching it. I don't care to keep going.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How much on Vikings, Dave, are there like mystical items? Do they have Thor's hammer?
There is. It's generally realistic, but they do introduce mystical elements with plausible deniability. But it's not like Odin and Thor come or join the battle or anything like that.
Sure.
Yeah. But yeah, the only thing about Nightfall that can make it really interesting in that vein is if they really go like crazy bonkers deep on Grail conspiracy stuff.
Yeah, it kind of seems like Carson is trying to make his own fun as the Pope. Like he's the campiest character that there is, but he really sticks out. Like he's off model for everyone else. And Tom Cullen, who I have liked, and he was Lord Gillingham in a couple of seasons of Downton Abbey too. Like I thought he was a good actor, but he is not modulating his performance here at all. He's like Ben Affleck's Batman as a knight Templar. And Dave was like, who is that? Because he didn't recognize him. He has a beard in this. And I was like, well, he's Tatiana Maslany's boyfriend, and I hope she breaks up with him after seeing this, because he's bad.
Would you say he's like a Dark Knight Templar?
Get out.
Cough. All right, I mercifully ended the Nightfall conversation. Bring us to Around the Dial. And our first stop is Tara, Dark Knight Ariana. What do you got?
Hi, I wanted to do a quick roundup of some recent stand-up comedy specials in case that was something that you thought you might want to watch over the holidays when you have, you know, people to entertain.
Are we rating this on you know, full family viewing potential?
Sure.
Okay. Because that's important, because you need stuff to watch with your family so you don't have to engage in conversation with them.
Absolutely.
Okay.
So let's start with Brian Regan, who has a new special on Netflix, and I stupidly did not write down what it was called, so I'm going to look that up. Dave and I watched it over Thanksgiving week.
Always a good choice to watch with family. He's very funny, but not blue.
Yes, he's very clean, for sure. This is apparently called, look it up on Netflix. I don't have time. He generally stays clear of any kind of controversial topics. One, his first stand-up special, he does a bit about greeting cards, and like the person who invented the greeting card, he wakes up laughing. He's making money off a fold. Like, it's true. And here he's generally sticks to that sort of area. He has a long bit about how stupid tennis is, which I don't know anything about tennis, but I agreed with him. It was very funny. But he also, for some reason, decides to dip his toe into the Middle East and is like, does this bit about how what the really needs to solve the problems between Israel and Palestinians is a stern dad to like go over there and tell them to cut it out, which like, no, stay in your lane. This is more than you are capable of taking on, perhaps. But overall good. Dave, would you agree?
Yeah, it was funny. And the title is Nunchucks and Flamethrowers.
Thank you so much. Second is Michelle Wolf. Nice lady. This is on HBO Go. She is currently a writer and sometime performer on The Daily Show. Formerly was a writer on Late Night with Seth Meyers. And she did in-person on-camera bits as well. She was Grown Up Annie. She has like really red curly hair. So she would appear and she would do bits as like a drunk, louche, Lindsay Lohan-esque Annie, which were very funny. She also gets into she does some really funny stuff about women's bathrooms. She gets into it from the angle of like what men are wrong about when they concern troll about trans people going in women's washrooms, where she describes like what actually happens there and how not romantic it is. But she also gets into like she comes in hot with some material about like, I'm a feminist, but I'm an equal rights, I want equal pay feminist. I'm not like one of those free the nipple on Instagram feminists. And like, I totally agree that there are lines to be drawn, but like the free the nipple people aren't hurting anyone, and that seems weird and mean. Hers was good. I will say as much as I enjoyed her special, she also appeared on Late Night with Seth Meyers as a guest the week before it came out. And her interview with Seth Meyers was like more enjoyable than the whole special, because the two of them were just cracking each other up the whole time. And there were obviously lots of inside jokes and they were extremely charming together. And the least family friendly, but definitely the best of the three that I've watched recently is Tiffany Haddish, She Ready, which is on Showtime and Showtime Anytime. Obviously, Tiffany Haddish is having a moment. There's a lot of talk about her possibly even getting an Oscar nomination for her role in Girls Trip, and she should, because she was amazing. And the special is great. She's really energetic. She does a thing that you have to be super duper charming to get away with, which is laugh at her own punchlines. And she is and does. But she talks about, you know, dating in LA, growing up in foster care. It's really hilarious, really dirty, as you would expect if you saw her in Girls Trip, which you should. You can rent it now. That's in order of both goodness and family friendliness. Brian Regan, Michelle Wolf, Tiffany Haddish, Netflix, HBO Go, Showtime.
On that tip, you've been collecting movies and shows to watch with your mom when she comes here to visit us over Christmas.
My parents are going to be here for 2.5 weeks over the holidays. And they basically have already said they don't want to do anything. I know my dad is going to be mostly watching college football in the guest house, which is fine. It's his vacation. Yep.
Pardon? In his shorts.
Yes. But they live in Pakistan. And so there's a lot of culture that my mother misses. So I've been working on a list of all of the things I'm going to make her or encourage her to watch. And it's a fine line. She likes horror movies. She's okay with dirty stuff. But like, I would put on Big Little Lies, maybe not Insecure, but it's a very eclectic list. And I tweeted it last night. If you care to look at it, Tara Ariano. And for my plug, I will mention Will and Grace and Kevin and Tara. Will and Grace is having a special holiday episode this week. By the time this comes out, we will have dropped our podcast on it last night. It's a flashback to 1912 episode and then a question mark. Dear. I don't know why they did this, but they did. Oh, so Kevin and I will be talking about it / ripping it. The end.
Jim Durr.
I'm, as previously mentioned, not a huge television watcher for whatever reason, because I go to bed at like 7 o'clock.
And you have two kids.
I have two kids,
making you play video games with me. So.
And I've got to play video games with Dave. So there's only so many hours in the day, people. Maybe peak TV, but come on. So I was going to bring up the Great British Bake Off series 4 on Netflix, series 7 in England, because we can't have nice things. That appeared on Netflix fairly recently, and I just really like that show. It's a good show to watch. It doesn't demand a ton of attention, but it also doesn't have all the drama that is too much for me when I'm, you know, trying to fall asleep at 6:45. It keeps getting earlier. Have you noticed?
Is that the last? That's season 7's the last one with the original cast, right?
Yes. And you know, it's a good. You know, the cast is good. I don't entirely get the Paul hate. I think he's fine.
Yeah, thank you.
He's fine.
Yes, right. I agree.
I mean, like
he's not like Richard Hatch or anything. Like he's fucking. Right. He's just like a little ornery, and that's
yeah.
Fine.
He won't eat raw dough.
Yeah,
that seems reasonable to me.
History's greatest monster, Paul Hollywood, won't eat raw dough.
I'm like, okay, that seems fair. He's probably had some bad experiences with raw dough. I'm gonna give him that one. The contestants for the season are excellent as always. Like, I never feel like I root against anyone on that show. I always have my favorites, the people who I'm hoping do well. But like, you know, whenever anyone does poorly, you're always like, oh, that's too bad. I feel bad for that person.
See, something you don't know about Jim, why he can get away with this. He is not on social media. So he can watch season 7
That's
of
true.
Great British Bake
Off. He's on social media. He
is. Yeah, but not like the rest of humanity. He has social media accounts.
I follow like you three.
He's not
and my
extremely
wife.
Online.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
No.
So he doesn't know that Reginald won season 7.
Well, no, I have now caught up with that season, and I did actually have to look up to figure out what series it was in England versus what it was displaying in Netflix, which totally ruined it for me. Like a 2-second Google search was like, motherfucker. Perfect. Thanks. Which was on me. Like, of course, the first thing you hit when you search whatever Great British Bake Off and Series 7 is like the winner of Series 7.
So your problem was you needed a Google search for Great British Bake Off Season 7 minus winner. And that definitely would have worked.
Perfect. And then my plug, since I don't actually do anything, is a corollary to what I've been watching is the Two Spotted Dicks on the Great British Bake Off podcast on the previously.tv network with Daniel McEachern and Adam Grossworth. I can now listen to that because I've now watched that series. And that's been great to sort of go back and listen to those post episode. And get some additional opinions.
Yeah, that's a fun podcast. It actually got me into watching the show. Like, I had no interest, and then I started watching it because I had to. And I was like, this is actually kind of fun. And it's a good show, definitely. Sarah D. Bunting.
I don't know why Netflix recommended Dark to me, aka Stranger Things Germany, except actually all the dialogue is dubbed, which is a decision I'm still not sure about. I'm 3 episodes into it. Part of that is on me because at this time of year, I want to binge watch without having to actually watch the screen every second because I'm trying to knit. But it's also just a weird choice. It also may be intentional to remind people of the 1980s, which is where much of this action takes place. Basically, it's about this little town, 4 interconnected families, people going missing and then reappearing, and, you know, other people making crazy walls in their hotel rooms and put like writing post-its like, where, you know, not where is Michael, when is Michael. But at the same time, it's I don't know, it's good. It's got like little things that remind me of The Ring, Fortitude, The Missing, that Slenderman documentary. The music cues, I think, were ripped straight off of Hannibal, but I don't mind. I love that show too. It can move a little slowly, and you might wonder why everyone in pop culture has to go there with the dead birds. Like, we get it. Something's wrong. But it does pull you along, this show. Very atmospheric. You almost don't notice that you've gotten sucked into it. And if things are too slow, you can source the delightful knitwear of Northern Europe, as I may or may not have been doing during part of episode two. So, yeah, Dark. It's on Netflix. The whole season dropped last Friday. Let me know what you think. You can hit me on Twitter at Tomato Nation. Not sure it's family friendly viewing. In fact, it's definitely that. There's nudity, but yeah, depends on your family. I don't want to judge. My plug is actually fairly family friendly, not our podcast, which is filthy. Go Pirates, a Veronica Mars podcast, has now begun chipping away at season two of Veronica Mars. I definitely recommend people watch that along with us. Talk to us about it on the forums. And my co-host, John Ramos, and I have a lot to say about every episode of the show. It drops on Fridays. That's Go Pirates.
Now it's time for the debut of the Littlest Hobo recap. This is season one, episode one, Smoke, from October 11th, 1979. We open on a forest fire. Hobo, that's the dog, is carrying a baby bobcat in his mouth and drops it at the feet of a forest ranger. He leaves, comes back with what? A second baby bobcat. Is baby bobcat town. Hobo's the mayor. The ranger names Hobo Smoke and takes him and the bobcats back to his home where his girlfriend is feeding the cubs with a baby bottle. The phone rings. He gets a call. Mrs. Spivey is calling. There is a creature under her porch. He goes there. Turns out to be a skunk. No problem. He's a park ranger. He can handle that. While there, Hobo starts tugging on the apron of Mrs. Spivey to get her to walk away from a certain area because Hobo has spied a bear trap that she is slowly backing into. She complains because this dog is biting her apron.
Your dog turned on me.
Smoke?
In the most old lady voice ever. And then Hobo puts a log on the bear trap, smack, and then the ranger's like, he saved you, lady. And then he discovers that the hardware owner in town has been selling traps and poison to all the townspeople because the forest fire has driven the animals into town. So he goes to the hardware store and has an argument with the owner. Here it is.
The way I see it, someone threatens your livelihood, you wipe it out. I ain't no lover of wild animals.
You know I can stop you from doing this.
Now, this ain't no public park. You got no authority here. You're just a ranger. Now, why don't you clear out of here before I throw you out?
Rooker, I'm warning you.
You're warning me what?
While this is happening inside, Hobo's outside and he finds a plate of baited ground beef outside the hardware store and overturns it. Then there's a noise and we get this bobcat caught in a trap outside. It's angry, plus there's excellent 70s music. The ranger goes to free it, but Rooker, that's the hardware guy, comes out with a rifle and he's going to shoot it. Hobo jumps on him just before he pulls the trigger and he sends the shot wide. An unconvincing wrestling fight between the ranger and the hardware store guy breaks out. Hobo grabs the rifle and walks away with it. Back at the hardware store, a father with a kid named Davey is given the rat sales pitch by Mr. Rooker. And he puts the kid down outside for some reason, and Davey goes and eats some poisoned raw beef. Have we ever met a baby that's going to really chow down on raw ground beef? Probably not, but this one did.
What was in this, Rooker?
Come on, Davey. What's the matter? What's that all over your face?
My God, that meat was poisoned.
Spit it up, Davey. Spit it up.
I never thought.
We better get him over to Dr. Johnson's fast. Let's go.
No, wait. The doc's gone down to the city. Won't be back till Thursday.
Thank God, Rooker. If anything happens to my boy, I swear I'll
leave him. Look, we haven't got time for this. Let's take him over to Susan. Come on.
Susan, she's a vet.
Davey passes out in the car, goes into shock at the vet. The parents are super mad at Rooker, obviously. The hobo and the ranger get on a plane to fly to pick up the out-of-town Doc because apparently the only bridge in and out of town was burnt down in the fire. They're in the plane, and on their return, the weather is too bad for a landing at the local airstrip. The ranger wants the doctor, who's in the passenger seat, to fly the plane so the ranger can parachute out with the antidote. But the doctor doesn't know how to fly a plane. At this point, Hobo barks at the parachute. So, of course, the ranger straps it on Hobo, and Hobo jumps out of the plane.
Good luck, Smoke.
At the roller rink.
So he jumps out of the plane, and we're shown this whole thing. This scene's going on forever. He drops. We get vistas. We get close-ups. We get the parachute opening up. And by the way, the parachute opens up straight out of the plane. Hobo is not responsible for pulling the ripcord. So, he lands. He unhooks the straps with his paw somehow and runs to the vet with the medicine, where he's told he is a good boy, and then he lies down for a well-deserved nap. At this point, Rooker comes in. He's the hardware store owner, and he gives the parents flowers. I don't know why. It's like he's already dead or something. I don't know what's going on.
Just preempting the...
Davey wakes up because he's given the antidote and pets Hobo, and Hobo wags his tail. Later on, Rooker has recalled his traps. The ranger almost proposes to his girlfriend, and while they kiss, Hobo takes his leave.
Smoke? Smoke? You know, I think he's gone. Same way he came. Out of a cloud of smoke. Goodbye, Smoke.
Oh my God.
There's a voice that keeps on calling me down the road. That's where I'll always be. Every stop I make a new friend. Can't stay for long, just turn around and I'm gone again.
Everybody now.
Maybe tomorrow I'll wanna settle down. Until tomorrow I'll just keep moving on.
It is time for the canon.
Hey, what the fuck did I learn the pickle and peanut song for if you're not even going to bring it up?
Oh, I forgot about that. We'll do that at a later time.
All right.
I didn't want to mention that.
Prepare yourself. But for now, we'll do the canon. Jim Durr is pitching. Jim Durr, take it away.
Hi. I am pitching Futurama Season 1, Episode 13, Fry and the Slurm Factory, originally broadcast on November 14th, 1999. Directed by Ron Hugart and written by Lewis Morton. The actual television order was Season 2, Episode 4, because Fox and football, I'm assuming, and to my recollection, they always had a really hard time actually airing this show under any circumstances. Futurama is at its best when Fry is being really stupid. The episodes that are maudlin, shout out to Jurassic Bark, or focus on Fry and Leela's relationship, in quotes, are less good. I would be interested in revisiting Jurassic Bark now that Tara and Dave are dog owners at some point, but that's for another
time. I've watched it since, is still my answer.
Yeah, you still don't care?
No.
You don't think Gordon would wait for you outside the pizza shop?
Definitely not.
No, Baxter wouldn't have either. Like 0% chance. Somebody walks out with a sausage pizza, he's gone. This episode, not that one, but this one, epitomizes the zany wackiness of the show and make it a worthy canon entry. And we start with a little All My Circuits, but then get into the real plot, introduced here by Slurmus McKenzie in clip one.
Hey, dudes! You can win a chance to party with me, Slurmus McKenzie, at the Slurm Bottling Plant on Planet Wormulon!
Just look for the golden bottle cap inside specially marked cans of Slurm!
I won!
No purchase necessary unless you wish to enter the contest. Odds of winning mathematically insignificant.
I like those odds.
One of the nice things about this specific episode is that everyone, except Scruffy the janitor and Hattie the cat lady, gets at least a couple lines. Zoidberg gets to say robots, which is my favorite, yep, and is spectacularly incompetent. Amy is clumsy and trusting. Hermes is more concerned with money than people and robots. Bender isn't feeling well, as evidenced by his 900-degree fever, and Dr. Farnsworth introduces the F-ray. I'm not going to admit how many times I had to watch this before I realized the F stands for Farnsworth. Literally sitting there going, well, I know X-rays. Why would you call them? He literally says that this is a flimsy excuse to try his latest invention. Amy's watch, which Bender had stolen, has jammed up some of the gears. And I'd like to point out here how efficient Bender is inside. He's basically like four gears, a CPU, and arms and legs. There's barely anything going on in there. Bender returns the watch and steals Amy's earrings. Of course, when Dr. Farnsworth tasks Bender and Fry with putting the F-ray away, they take it for their own purposes, which leads to clip two.
What should we point it at first?
I don't know. Try it on me. Ow! My sperm!
Wow, neat. Mind if I try that again?
Huh. Didn't hurt that time.
While grabbing a drink to quench his thirst from all the prolonged exposure to radiation, Fry finally starts to get an idea in clip three.
If only there was some way of knowing which can had the winning bottle cap inside.
Huh, what? I didn't hear you. I was too busy using this F-ray to look inside of things.
Wait a second. I'm getting an idea. No. False alarm. No, yeah, no, yeah, no, wait, no, yeah, no, no. Yes!
The journey that Billy West, Fry's voice actor, takes us on just to come to the obvious conclusion that the audience arrived at back when Fry and Bender took the F-ray in the first place is great. And it's nice that the show, despite being 22 minutes long, gives the bit the extra time to breathe. The F-ray wins them a bunch of junk, but doesn't get them the prize they are so desperate for, so they give up, and Fry never wants to see another can of Slurm again. So naturally, he grabs one from the fridge and finally finds the golden bottle cap lodged snugly in his throat. The whole group gets to visit the Slurm factory, where they're greeted by Glurmo, the Willy Wonka stand-in down to the purple suit and impressive entrance, and Slurm's Mackenzie, the original party worm, who really just wants to lie down for a while. I'd say I identify with him, but I've never been a party guy. I just really like lying down. Glurmo introduces the factory as the wonderful world of whimsy that we call the Slurm Centralized Industrial Fabrication Unit. They enter the factory and are introduced to the Grunkalunkas in clip four.
Who are those horrible orange creatures over there? Why, those are the Grunkalunkas. They work here in the Slurm factory. Tell them I hate them.
I love how needlessly mean that line is. First, they're horrible, and then the professor goes out of his way to tell Glurmo to let the Grunkalunkas know that he hates them.
I think he does that later in the series to the Swedes, I think. In the Olympics episode, yeah.
Yeah. I also like how Glurmo specifically brings up the secret ingredient, but when that causes people to ask some follow-up questions, he shuts down the whole line of questioning. Also, don't have a door labeled Do Not Enter on your tour if you don't want people to ask about it. It does give the Grunkalunkas an opportunity for some singing in clip five.
Hey, what's behind that door?
Nothing.
Is it the secret ingredient?
Grunkalunka dunkity ingredient. You should not ask about the secret ingredient.
Okay, we get the point.
I was just curious because of the armed guards.
Grunkalunka dunkity darn guards.
Shut the hell up!
That's my favorite bit in the episode. Yeah. And the real reason I'm doing this canon, it was really just for that clip. So I'm done. No. Fry's Slurm addiction finally gets the better of him, and he, Leela, and Bender end up in the Slurm River and eventually make their way into the hidden depths of the Slurm factory, where some startling revelations await in clip six.
My God, what if the secret ingredient is people?
No, there's already a soda like that. Soylent Cola.
Oh, how is it?
It varies from person to person.
That whole bit is just a setup for the punchline, and that delights me. We get a moment with the rest of the group in the gift shop just now realizing that Fry, Leela, and Bender are missing, because they're all such good friends. The actual revelation that Slurm is just jelly being squirted out of the Slurm Queen directly into the cans with appropriately disgusting Foley work is so horrifying that Fry can barely finish the can that he's working on. The gang is captured and brought to the torture cave, you know, like everyone has. Placed in different James Bond villain-esque death traps, Bender in a can-making machine, Leela dipped into royal jelly to become a Slurm Queen, and there's a nice New Coke conspiracy theory dig in there, and Fry to eat himself to death with concentrated super Slurm. Fry does manage to tear himself away for just long enough to save Leela, It's a purely visual gag, but the way he stretches his leg to flip the lever up to save Leela while staying close to his trough of slurm is a good bit of business. She gets to Bender almost in time for him to come out unscathed, and then Leela dumps the super slurm, leading Fry to clip 7.
No! I could fit if I didn't have these damn arms!
There's some good chewing and gnawing noises there.
I'm really glad you clipped that.
During their escape, they run into Slurm's Mackenzie, who begs them to rescue him. He just wants to rest and watch some videos with a few friends. The Slurm Queen shows up, and Slurms nobly sacrifices himself in clip 8.
I'll save you the only way I know how! By partying!
Babes?
Yes, Mr. Mackenzie?
You've served me well these 40 years, but this time I've got to party alone.
But...
there'll be other parties for you. Now go! Go!
I'm going to be honest. Half the reason I suggested this episode for the canon is because I know Tara likes that bit, so I figured it couldn't hurt.
I do!
The power of Slurm's partying brings down the tunnel. There's a nice sight gag here where Slurm's gets hit in the head with a rock, but it doesn't crush him instantly. There's a fraction of a second before he goes down. The cave-in keeps the Slurm Queen from reaching the group. She laments that they're ruined because she's sure the secret of Slurm will get out, and she consoles herself by feeding herself Slurm, which is disgusting. On the way home, the professor tells the head of the Bureau of Soft Drinks, Tobacco, and Firearms about the terrifying truth, but Fry realizes that'll mean no more Slurm, so he convinces the official that Grandpa's just making up crazy stories. Professor Farnsworth helps with this by declaring Fry's uncle from the year 2000. The crew toasts Slurm's memory and all enjoy a nice can of Slurm. So that's Futurama, Fry and the Slurm Factory. I hope you'll consider adding it to the canon, and even if you don't, we'll always have Slurm's Mackenzie dancing himself to death.
Well, I think my and Dave's votes are probably pretty predictable, so let's start with Sarah.
Everything that I was going to mention was clipped. Excellent presentation. This was really fun. I think what I like best about this episode, unfortunately, is a couple of little visual moments. And as Jim said, like that they're allowed to breathe in such a short episode was great. Like when Farnsworth is like to the laboratory, and then there's just like just enough plodding that he's just like, cool. I mean, they didn't have to do that, but it was good. And then in the gift shop, when a slug goes by, and it was like, they need to remember that slug trail is there. And then 2 seconds later, someone Pratt fell in it. I appreciated that. The Foley work was really gross. I loved all the references to New Coke. And I mean, I sometimes wonder if like younger people watching this would even get these references, but I don't have to worry about younger people. This old lady really enjoyed it, and that was a great presentation, and I vote yes.
I'll go, Tara.
Okay.
So the one thing that you clipped that reminded me, one of the reasons I like Futurama seasons, whatever, to before the movies, and then the movies came, and I'm like, ugh. But this is definitely from the good part of the Futurama run, is the Soylent Green joke. And I hate Soylent Green jokes generally because they're very lazy, but this is like the joke, and then I was like rolling my eyes, and then it varies from person to person. It really makes it all worth it. Like, you know, they go the extra mile, right? Like, yes. A lesser show would have just done the Soylent Green is made out of people thing, but then like they actually have a joke, which is like, you know, we've hammered on this before, but like the culture of just referencing something and that being the joke is so annoying. It is so lazy and annoying, and you see it a lot these days. But to actually do something with it is the minimum, but they actually like A, thankfully do it, and B, delivering a really good joke out of it. The whole Slurm's Mackenzie conceit is excellent. Of course, he's based on the Budweiser dog, if you don't know, from 1642. It's a long
time. Yeah, another thing that young people wouldn't know about necessarily. Yeah,
that's what I was
Mackenzie.
Talking about. Spuds. Yeah. No one would get that.
Yep.
And Tara will talk more about this. But his last scene is like just one of the great animation moments. Like, it is so well drawn, the sort of resigned partying.
Yeah.
is just a fantastic visual moment. And also some good in there. they do repeat some of the Fry stupid things. This episode where he's reminded me of the lizards versus the parrot, where he's trying to find a gift for Leela. Mm-hmm. And as I mentioned, I do believe he says, "Tell them I hate them," to the Swedish Olympic team in the Bender go see the Olympics as a lady robot
Fembot
episode. This episode is just really funny. It does a lot with the Willy Wonka stuff. The darn guards thing killed me the first time.
Yeah.
And the timing of Bender, "Shut the hell up," is just
Dunkity Dasis.
Yeah. Simpsons and Futurama really share excellent comedy timing, and they know when to interrupt a joke and they know when to end it generally. And I think this episode really does well with that. And the darn guards part is just fabulous. I do believe that is Pamela Anderson is one of the models as well.
I really?
I think she appears a couple times in the series as a head in a jar, and then
She was a head in a jar, and then while she was there, they recorded her for this because they had an idea for this. So, or vice versa,
or vice versa.
And the other thing I found out is I found the song that they do is an actual song. Here's a little clip from it. I'm Apple's Peaches Monkified. Who wants to love me? Holler, I'll thrust my lust upon you, but don't ever piss me off. I got a tan like David Hasselhoff. I don't know who that band is, what the relationship is to the show, but yeah, there you go. The actual song. So Tara, what are your thoughts?
Oh, of course. I love it. This was, I think, the first time that they really went hog wild with a parody of a pre-existing media product. They also have a Titanic spoof in what ended up being the finale of this season, I think. But you can tell why this was originally supposed to be season one, episode 13, whether it actually aired there or not. Like, they really put their own stink on the Charlie and the Chocolate Factory movie story. Obviously, visually, it bears more resemblance to the movie than the book. But all you had to do was clip the moment of Slurms dancing. And although I didn't really notice as many times as I've seen this episode, which is a lot, that you can even tell how tired and like pushing his voice, exhausted Slurms is in that first clip that you cut where it's the ad. And even then, when you listen to it without the visuals, you can really tell, oh, he just needs to lie down. I get it, Slurms. dancing while seething or angry or grim-faced is one of my favorite things, and this is probably where that started. And shout out to Search Party, because they have one of those moments in the season two premiere as well, with John Early doing a gorgeous job of that sort of thing. It's great. Everything about it is hilarious. That presentation was extremely good, and not that you needed to be that convincing, but it was that also. So thank you for bringing it to us.
So before I go into the vote, I just want to say, this is, if you're looking for this episode, you'll either find it under season one, episode 13, or season two, episode 4. I think the season 2-1
is the width. I think that's how it's categorized on Hulu.
Yeah. So anyways, let's vote, shall we? Sarah D. Bunting, what say you?
Yes, sir.
Tara Ariana?
Yes.
And I'll also say yes. So. Futurama Season 2, Episode 4, Fry and the Slurm Factory. You are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Gray Canon. All right, I forgot to do this in the Around the Dial, so we're just going to slip it in now. It is Tara Ariano's Pickle and Peanut Theme Challenge. Now, I just want to say, Tara's been practicing. She feels very confident that today is the day that she is going to nail it. Tara, your thoughts?
Yeah, I feel good.
Headphones off for a moment. I'm going to play the theme again for our listeners so they can hear it.
Yep.
Here we go.
Sharks, swords, yogurt, cakes, fries, smartphones, hot tubs, yeah. Shades, bagels, grills, airbrush, chrome, blankets, mopeds, yes. Drop top, laptop, breath mints, bars, kittens, whiskeys, drive-thrus, fresh.
Tight pants, widescreens, tacos, wheelies, freestyles, thrift stores, mini trampolines.
All right, that's the part that Tara has to say. All right, Tara.
Sharks, swords, yogurt, kicks, fries, smartphones, hot tubs, yes. Shades, bagels, grills, airbrush, chrome, blankets, mopeds, yeah. Drop top, laptop, breath mint, scars, kittens, oh no!
Kittens?
Kittens, wet skis, drive through fresh, tight pants, wide screens, tacos, wheelies, Freestyle Thrift Stores Mini Trampolines.
You are correct, and yay! You have passed the Pickle and Peanut Challenge. Congratulations, Tara. It was a long
And it's
road.
Hollywood facts, and we're going downtown, going to Inglewood now. Everybody know your facts and know your stars. There's glitz and glamour and lots of bars. Have a drink at a club, then go walk in front of Chinese Theater. Hollywood facts, take out your dick. Check out the facts, it's your Hollywood facts.
Americans love a winner. And will not tolerate a loser.
I like, I'm not even going to explain why you did that, because that's funny just on its own. All right, it is
the people
time for,
who know why.
It is time for winner and loser of the week. Tara has a winner, and it's not her. It could
no,
be, but it's not.
Should be.
It's not. Winners collectively are the McGraw family, Dr. Phil and Phil Jr. Just kidding. His name is Jay. They have sold another pilot to CBS. This one is going to be called Class Action. It's based on Jay McGraw's real life experiences at a Texas university, according to Deadline. They don't name which one, so I assume it's not very prestigious. But according to Deadline, a law student looking for the easy way out gets more than he bargained for when he finds himself in a class where he and an eclectic group of fellow law students are required to argue actual cases in court. A, this sounds preposterous. B, CBS will probably find an audience for it because they also air the McGraw's show Bull, which is also legal. But I am surprised to learn that Jay McGraw went to law school because I thought he was just coattail riding his dad with his fake life coaching business. So this is news. Anyway, congratulations to the McGraws.
Loser of the week? Wait. Let me guess. Is it men?
It is Bad Men Corner Hour once again on Extra Hot Grade. I really feel like just saying everyone but Pat Kiernan is better, unless and until it is Pat Kiernan. Confidential to Pat Kiernan.
God
forbid.
Please
no. Please no. The whole city will just break off and fall in the sea.
Yep.
Anyway, we got some Matt Lauer. We got some Russell Simmons removed from the Def Comedy Jam specials. We got Geraldo helping with stupid tweets and also groping Bette Midler and also being Donald Trump's fucking little butt boy on Celebrity Apprentice. And yes, I remembered that with no prompting. And yes, he also took his shirt off. He's a pig. Fuck off, Geraldo.
Yep.
Bruno Langley, ex of Coronation Street. The Blue Jays TV analyst, Greg Zahn. Hi, dude.
Yep.
Even more Kevin Spacey. House of Cards season 6 will happen, but without him, which is what should have happened regardless of what was going on. Apparently, hey, Pamela Anderson, again, has been victim blaming to anyone who will listen. I would also like to add that nobody seems to believe Terry Crews or care that he got his crotch grabbed by some big time agent. And Tara, you had a late addition.
I do. This one just came up while we were recording. A Netflix executive named Andy Yateman was at a kid's soccer game in Los Angeles over the weekend and started chatting with a woman about the accusations against Danny Masterson, who is on the Netflix show The Ranch. And this guy, Andy Yateman of Netflix, was like, yeah, we don't believe the women. And the woman was like, really? Because I'm one of them. Oh, shit.
Wow.
So.
Well, speaking about sticking your foot in your mouth, do you know what time it is?
Well, there's more to it, but yes.
Oh, God. Cut it out.
All right. This is the third game time of the season. Season scores are Tara 2, Sarah 0, Value Guest 0. Today we are playing Super Nintendo Chalmers from Brandon Brazo, the Brazier, as I'm now calling him, who earns himself an extra credit redeemable for an extra hot, great mini topic of his choosing. Brandon writes, why are there video games based off TV shows? To get some of that sweet, sweet TV licensing money. That's why there's profit to be had. And you know, people like to play video games. In this game time, we are looking for the name of the TV show that the video game being described is based on.
Oh, man.
Oh, boy.
2 points if you can get it without a hint. 1 point if you use the hint. All right. And he has elected that you can guess the first clue without penalty. He's generous. Oh. I don't know if I would have done that. I'm going to respect the brassiere's wishes. Okay. Understand?
Except you're going to continue to call him the brassiere.
Oh, the brassiere.
And it was his last game time submission ever. No one knows why. Everyone knows why.
Also, Dave is dead.
We will start with Tara.
All right. Our order for today is Tara, Sarah, Jim, are we ready to play Super Nintendo Chalmers?
Possibly. Yes, but first I just want to inform Jim that the value guests have two steel meals, so that keep that question. In mind.
Thank you.
Yep. Okay, excellent. All right, Tara. Although this game initially starts you ranked as a dishwasher, you don't actually have to wash any dishes, but you function as a busboy, greeter, and waiter in addition to your duties as head chef. In arcade mode, the pressure builds. As customers become increasingly demanding, players will be challenged to keep up before time runs out, or the chef loses patience and closes the kitchen.
Okay. Well, it's like probably, I have two guesses, but I'm going to go with Hell's Kitchen. Hey!
You are correct for 2 points. That was Hell's Kitchen, colon, the video game.
Great.
Sarah, here's your first question. This show has spawned quite a few games since its debut in 2000, and its games contain subtitles such as Heatwave, Hard Evidence, Unsolved, Three Dimensions of Murder, and Hidden Crimes.
CSI.
Correct. Nice!
All right, Jim. Mm-hmm. According to an online review of this game, dragging a suspect over to a toilet to submerge his head or over to a hot stove to burn his face sounds like an amusing prospect, but these interrogation sequences are handled so dryly and joylessly that you quickly become bored with them. When you find some contraband inside a house or hideout, you can either use it to feed your retirement fund or turn it in at the station's evidence locker to reduce your heat rating.
The Shield?
Nice.
Wow.
Correct.
Well done.
All right, everybody's got 2 points.
Correct.
Tara, released in 2009, 14 years after the show was canceled, this point-and-click game mostly consists of our widowed lead performing digital scavenger hunts, looking for evidence to finger murder suspects, and collecting hidden items such as peace signs and hamburgers. Peace signs and hamburgers.
Of a show that was canceled in 1995.
Yep.
Hint.
All right. You don't want to guess? Because you can free guess.
Oh, okay. I don't know. The Wonder Years.
Okay. In the game, you team up with Dr. Seth Hazlitt and Sheriff Mort Metziger to investigate the ongoings in murder-filled Cabot Cove.
What was the last word?
Cabot Cove.
Oh, Murder, She Wrote.
Correct. The game, Murder, She Wrote. Easy to remember. Mm-hmm. Okay, Sarah.
Yeah.
In this interactive movie point-and-click adventure video game that came out in 1998, the player can alter other characters' attitudes and reactions depending on their in-game responses and actions. Dubbed Uber variables, certain decisions can set them along one of three tracks: paranoia, loss, and the blank track. And I have redacted that, so that is the something track.
Paranoia, loss, and the blank track? X-Files?
Paranoia, loss. Correct.
Hey! Oh!
Nice work.
Your role in the game is to find two missing FBI agents who are last seen in the Everett, Washington area. One of those annoying games where you actually don't play anybody from the actual property.
Oh, that's
property.
Lame.
Yeah, that is the X-Files game. Way to go, guys. All right, Jim. In this episodic interactive graphic adventure survival horror video game, you got that? Episodic interactive drama. This is very important. 1, episodic. 2, interactive. 3, drama. 4, graphic adventure. 5, survival horror video game. All the choices the player makes are equally wrong, according to developer, which fits in thematically with the lead character of this show, whose choices also seem to be always wrong.
Walking Dead?
The Walking Dead, correct. That video game is pretty well regarded, as I recall.
Season one, yeah.
Yeah. All right, back to Tara. The first and last level of this game took advantage of the show's gross-out humor, which reportedly has caused some players to throw up. In the first level, you try to survive in the mouth of one of its characters from the show and try to defeat the Tooth Beaver.
What? Outlander, I don't know.
All right, here's your hint. Released in 1993 on the Super Nintendo and Game Boy, the game kept the show's trademark animation style, oh, happy, happy, joy, joy.
Oh, Ren and Stimpy.
That is Ren and Stimpy Show Vidiots. Vidiots.
Got it.
All right, Sarah. In this voice clip, you'll hear one of the actors from the show in question describing the relationship between himself and the main character you control in the game.
He's a pain in the ass. He needs a kick every now and then, and Paulie's the perfect guy to do that to. Paulie's trying to school him on being sharp, but every now and then the kid retards out a little bit. But Paulie pulls him back in.
Do you know I've seen that guy twice in the last 3 days? He lives down the street from me.
Wow. Is that true?
That's wow. Paulie Walnuts of The Sopranos.
You Thanks, are Pinky. Correct. The Sopranos' Road to Respect. God, these names. Okay, back to Jim. Three games released in 1998 for this title character show. The first two being educational kids video games subtitled U.S. Geography and Thinking Skills, which came with puzzles and other learning adventures, including a game to catch Lucky the family cat. Let me just add, the 80s were a different time, apparently.
Yeah, I guess. I'm going to guess Carmen Sandiego.
I think that was
incorrect.
Game first.
In the other title, not mentioned yet, the player has to run around and collect pizzas and parts for his starship while trying not to get caught by Willie Tanner. In this game, you also grab cats, but first you must eat a pizza before a cat can be picked up. Excuse me. Players who make the high score become members of the honorary Melmax Clean Club.
Elf.
Yeah. This is Elf's Thinking Skills, Elf's U.S. Geography, and Elf, The First Adventure. Wow. Oh, my God. Sorry for that burp.
Are you? You don't seem very sorry.
Maybe not.
No, I'm not. All right, back to Tara. In this game, you must first travel to a casino in Monte Carlo, which hides a huge arm manufacturing facility in the basement, and then to a museum in Saudi Arabia, where you disarm a rather large nuclear warhead in the desert, followed by an insane asylum in Romania, where prisoners are used as human guinea pigs for experiments with lasers, and then to a laboratory beneath an embassy in Hong Kong, which you have to help evacuate and escape before it blows up, and then finally a nightclub in Rio de Janeiro, where the machine is located.
Alias?
The machine is in quotes.
Okay. Alias?
Woo! Yes. That's a lot.
Yeah.
Okay, Sarah. In this text adventure game released in 1984, you play as a detective who's been hired to retrieve a map that points to an extremely rich oil field from a guy named Chug-a-Lug Jones, who runs a trading post in a South American village. You overcome a series of obstacles to get the map by using various techniques, such as doping a friendly monkey with tobacco.
As you do.
Knight Rider?
I don't know. Incorrect. Your hint. In the game, Sue Ellen has contracted you to get the map and bring it back to her ranch.
God damn it.
So that she can gain financial independence from her scheming oil tycoon husband.
The monkey threw me off. Dallas?
Dallas. Correct. Tara? No.
Nope. Jim.
Nope.
Jim.
Yeah.
Yeah. The parrot.
The Barrett. Based on the comic series created by Carl Banks, in this video game, you travel to African mines, the Amazon, the Himalayas, Transylvania, and the moon in search of five treasures to further increase your fortune.
Johnny Quest.
Incorrect. Your hint. You may be, more familiar with its super iconic theme song, rendered here from the game itself. Correct for 1 point. Bring us into our first score break.
It's very close. Sarah is in the lead with 7 points. Jim and I are tied with 6 apiece.
Ooh. All right. So value guests are behind in the season rankings. So this one is for Jim.
Okay.
Jim, you're in the Grossworth Kirsten Equalizer Challenge Zone. I'm going to read you 6 questions from this TV edition Trivial Pursuit box from the mid-90s.
Come
are
on,
you
Jim.
Ready?
Yes.
From the classics category, who, with his wife Ruth, aired the first husband and wife religious program on TV? Good luck.
Billy Graham?
No.
It's not? That's what I would have guessed.
It's not. It's Dr. Norman Vincent Peale.
Oh, sure.
Probably predated.
Sure, yeah.
Billy, by.
Sitcom. What 1990 Ed Begley Jr. series is based on a Steve Martin movie?
The Jerk.
Incorrect. Parenthood.
Later.
Drama. All right, here you go. Here you go, John. Mm-hmm. Drama. What show opens? There are those that believe life here began out there, far across the universe. What show opens?
No idea.
Oh.
And it's in drama?
No show, I know that.
But it's in drama?
Yeah, it's in drama. Wait, take a guess if you want.
Dallas.
No, it's Battlestar Galactica.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. All right, so you got to get all these.
Mm-hmm.
Kids and games category. What short-lived 1985 game show's final round was called the Time Capsule? 1985 game show was called the Time Capsule.
For kids.
Yeah. Well, kids and games. So.
Right. Oh, right.
Could be either. I have no idea.
Yeah. Time Machines. All right. Just for shits and giggles.
Yep.
What 19-year-old Cosby Show vet starred in the spinoff of A Different World?
Lisa Bonet.
Correct. What has been dubbed an idiot box and one-eyed monster?
Television.
Television itself. Correct. All right. Let's get back to the game. Sarah D.
Nope.
Bunting.
Nope.
Resembling other cooking shows.
It's for me.
And by Sarah, I mean Tara.
Uh-huh.
You've cracked my Enigma code of game time.
It happens.
Resembling other cooking shows, cooking games such as Cooking Mama, this game, based on a Food Network show in which players use either the Wii remote or the stylus on the Nintendo DS to pick, prepare, and arrange your dishes, and the judges decide the winning dish while competing against an opponent.
Chopped?
Dubbed by some as the professional wrestling of cooking shows, players square off in the kitchen stadium and battle through a series of fast-paced and intense culinary challenges.
Iron Chef.
Iron Chef. The answer is Iron Chef America, but I ain't going to give it to you.
Okay,
Sarah. In this audio clip, we will hear the show's theme song as rendered by the game.
Thank you.
Okay, so that is a really terrible rendition.
Yeah.
Yep. That's why it's the first clue.
Okay.
Twin Peaks? There's one part.
No, incorrect. Hint. In this point-and-click lawyer adventure game, you do some questionable things for a lawyer, such as lying about your identity, leaving completely fraudulent answering machine messages with your firm's office number, and acquiring confidential records without a subpoena. The box that the game came in was designed to look like a personalized California license plate.
There it is.
Is it L.A. Law? That is really a bad rendition.
It is. Wow.
Like, not just, even close, no. Guys.
Please recall that my guess was Twin Peaks. Just sit with that for a second, and we can move on.
The plot for this game, Tara, consists
of... Jim.
Jim. Once again. The plot for this game consists of finding the Binford Ultra Power tool line that has just been stolen. The player's weapons include a nail gun, a blowtorch, and a chainsaw, which hurls energy waves, which are used to fight dinosaurs, acid-spewing mummies, and robot sentries.
All I can think of is the name of the show on the show. Home Improvement.
Yay!
Nice. Correct.
The game had no real instruction manual. In its place, a fake manual was used with a sticker reading, "Real men don't need instructions."
Ugh.
That is Home Improvement Power Tool Pursuit. You know, when you fight dinosaurs and stuff.
Sure.
All right, back to Tara.
Yes.
Try to identify the TV show this video game is based off by identifying the sound-alike voice actors used to replace the main characters.
Okay.
I don't see any signs of head injury. I'd say you're suffering from amnesia brought on by the crash.
Me? I'm the guy who's about to put his boot up your butt if you don't stop asking questions.
Let's skip the formalities. There'll be time for introductions later. Right now, you need to focus.
Have you seen my boy, Walt? Walt!
Lost.
Correct. And another game where you play as a previously unseen character.
Sure.
Yeah, of course you do. Number 17.
Spread Eagle.
Sarah, while this game is based off the TV show, the show itself was based on a movie. In this game, you play as a young boy who is on a quest to stop the evil scientist, Dr. Putrid T. Gangrene, from unleashing his doomsday tomato.
Veggie Tales?
No. Keep in mind, it's a TV show that was based... It's a game based on a TV show based on a movie.
Based on a movie.
The show aired on Fox Kids from September 8th, 1990 to November 23rd, 1991, and the game was released in late 1991, though you won't find George Clooney or his likeness anywhere near this. Any guesses?
No.
Did we lose Sarah again? Oh, she's still there.
Mentally, okay. No idea.
Anybody?
Steel meal? Oh, I was proposing it. I don't have one. No.
No, I'm not going to steel meal that.
Okay, does anybody know it?
Is it Attack of the Killer Tomatoes?
It is Attack of the Killer Tomatoes.
Oh, right. I forgot he was even in that.
Yeah, me too.
But no points because I don't have steel meal.
Jim.
Yes.
This PC game, developed by Mumbo Jumbo, boasted key game features such as in-game caricatures, bobblehead dolls of cast favorites, collectible in-game items inspired by the show, computer-controlled rival competition, and humorous pranks. Any idea what that show is?
Benson.
As per the back of the box, play pranks on your rivals to slow them down, earn points by helping out your coworkers, and avoid getting distracted by all the visitors while competing to be the best paper salesperson you can.
The Office.
Most weapons in this game, Tara, have limited durability, Wooden weapons can be broken down into stakes, and the stakes will eventually break as well.
Buffy the Vampire Slayer?
Correct. Number 20 for Sarah D. Bunting. In this life simulation game where you can steal your neighbor's jewelry and try to seduce their husbands, you play as a housewife with amnesia caused from a jogging accident who has recently moved with her husband and son to a new neighborhood. A bug in the game that prevents the player from proceeding can be bypassed if you seduce someone before the 7 p.m. poker game.
Wow.
Desperate Housewives?
I can't believe they made a game of that.
Oh, I can't either.
Oh. Bizarre.
Okay, number 21 for Jim. Depending on what continent you were on in 1993, this puzzle-solving Nintendo Game Boy game had different titles. In Europe, it was known as Garfield Labyrinth. In Japan, it was known as Mickey Mouse 4, Maho no Labyrinth. In North America, the player has a proton gun instead of a pneumatic hammer, but is only effective on blocks at the character's feet, not on the ghosts, which must be destroyed with bombs.
Ghostbusters?
I'm gonna need to be more exact. Oh,
the real Ghostbusters?
Hey!
Labyrinth nice. Of something?
It's just called The Real Ghostbusters.
Labyrinth
yeah, no
of
labyrinth
slime.
In this title. No, yeah. Ghostbusters is not an acceptable answer, writes the author, as there was a Filmation cartoon with that name in the same year. Yeah. Back to Sarah.
Nope.
This game was announced under development at the E3 Expo in May 2002, just as the series, which was on Fox, was canceled. This is probably why the resulting game was a generic third-person beat-em-up and considered quite terrible.
Okay. This is for me, not Sarah.
Yep.
Is it?
I'm glad you guys are keeping track.
Yep. Is it Dark Angel?
Indeed it is.
Hey!
Dark Angel.
Wow. Nice
the
pull.
The name of the game? James Cameron's Dark Angel.
Of course.
Oh, oof.
Personally coded by Mr.
Ellen
Cameron.
Ellen Smithy's Dark Angel.
Okay. So, Sarah.
Yeah.
This game was released in 1980 for the Apple II computer long after the show had aired. It contained a protagonist called Number Sign and was reportedly used as a training tool by the CIA.
Oh, God.
A protagonist called Number Sign.
Yes.
Star Trek, the original series.
No. The game's documentation explained the developer's view that the television series was a political and social statement concerning the problem of keeping one's individuality and personal freedom in a technological society, which is a collective prison, and where each one of us is in fact a prisoner.
The prisoner.
How'd you get that?
Yeah.
Number 24, take us into our second score break for Jimothy. Our third person. In this third person stealth game released in 2010, the year after the show was canceled, players take control of Tom Paxson, an agent with covert organization The Company, who must go undercover as a prisoner within Fox River State Penitentiary.
Jailbreak or Prison Break?
Prison Break, The Conspiracy.
Nice.
Is correct.
Still very close. Jim and I are tied once again with 13 each, and Sarah has 11.
All right, so that means Sarah D. Bunting, you are in the Gross Prison Intellectual Challenge.
Good luck, Sarah.
Thank you.
Oh, no. So, full disclosure, my eyesight has deteriorated so much in the past 2 years. I actually need extra light to read the Trivial Pursuit questions on this game. And the flashlight that I'm using started going into strobe mode. And I might have a seizure during this. So,
why don't
classics.
You use the flashlight on your phone?
Well, it's awkward.
Okay.
What book editor and publisher was a mainstay on What's My Line? Classics.
Bennett Cerf?
Holy shit.
Nice.
I read a lot.
Classic like, trivia answer.
A lot.
Awesome.
Yeah. That and Mount Kilimanjaro. Good
odds. Okay. Two day points for that, too, because that answer
how many? Sorry?
Me. Two.
Nice.
I'll take them.
What 1990 sitcom was based on a John Candy movie?
Oh. Shit. Can I have the year again? What 1990?
Yeah. 1990. And if this was written later, there'd be additional information. If this card was written today, There would be 2 years involved.
Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Nope. That is Uncle Buck.
Damn it.
Yep. Drama. Who is the star insurance investigator for the Boston Casualty Company?
Okay. Drama?
Yeah, drama. Yeah. I that's the premise of the show.
I believe. Pretty sure that was Benson, Dave.
It's close. It's Banachek.
Oh, Benachek.
Yeah. All right. Kids and Games, what Groucho Marx show featured a secret word, a common word, something you see every day?
Oh, my God.
Or to put it another way, what's that one Groucho Marx show?
And we just heard What's My Line, but I don't think it's that. Unless it is. I don't have another answer, so What's My Line?
Close. You Bet Your Life.
Yes.
All right, so you need both of these.
You can do it.
Here is stars. Who did Ed Bradley replace on 60 Minutes?
Oh, God.
Who did he replace?
Who did?
Yeah, who did he replace?
Oh, yeah.
Fred replaced. Friendly.
Dan Rather.
Oh.
Oh.
All right, what Texan guess. Was sentenced to the electric chair in 1964 in the first televised courtroom verdict?
What Texan?
Yeah, yeehaw. Sentenced to the electric chair in 1964 in the first televised courtroom verdict.
Don't know.
Jack
Don't
Ruby.
Don't know. Jack Ruby.
Hey.
Oh, yeah. That guy.
All right, back to the game. And to Tara.
Yep.
In this epic role-play fantasy war game,
great.
The main playable character is New Kid, also known as Douchebag, a silent protagonist who has recently moved to the town, bringing with him conflict with aliens, Nazi zombies, and gnomes.
What's the deal on steel meals in this situation, Dave?
After Tara incorrectly answers, you can chime in.
But I get it. I get
Tara
a clue.
Tara has to try to answer.
Yeah, first. Yeah. And yeah, I yeah. will try. And my attempt is as follows. Alien Nation? Okay.
Incorrect. Here's your hint.
Okay.
To defeat the final boss, Nazi zombie Princess Kenny, Douchebag has to break the sacred rule by farting on Kenny's balls, which he does.
Oh. South Park?
Okay. South Park, The Stick of Truth is that game, correct?
All right.
The levels of this game, Sarah, are based on actual locations from the television series. They are Count Dracula, Count Dracula's castle in England, Cuckoo Clock Maker's Clock Tower in Switzerland, and Jungle Bob's Jungle Hideout in South America, not to mention King Tutankhamun's tomb in Egypt. Is that right? Tutankhamun's? Okay.
Probably.
I see. Yes. King Tutankhamun's tomb in Egypt and Dr. Claw's Winterland Castle. So once again, Count Dracula's castle in England, Cuckoo Maker's clock in Switzerland, Jungle Bob's Jungle Hideout, King Tutankhamun's tomb in Egypt and Dr. Claw's Winterland Castle.
Amazing Race?
Each level of this game is preceded by a short intro at the title character's house, reprising a running gag of the series in which the main character blows up Chief Quimby via a self-destructing message.
The Simpsons?
What? Oh, don't know. That's what I thought it was, and then you said Quimby.
Chief Quimby, not Mayor Quimby.
Oh, sorry.
Right. Yep.
Okay, the Nintendo DS version of this game, Jim, has been highly criticized for its poor graphics, limited gameplay, and a bug that whenever the system is shut down, the money goes back into the same briefcases upon replay.
Is this that Howie Mandel game show thing with the cases? Is this Gold Case? No.
the host of this game show has misophobia.
Mm-hmm.
And is also well known for being the creator and star of the children's cartoon Bobby's World.
Yeah, but I can't remember the name of the show with the.
Yeah, it doesn't help cases. You.
No, it really doesn't. I knew all of that prior.
Yeah.
That's all. I can't remember.
That is Deal or No Deal.
No Deal, Dave.
You had to.
Tara.
Yep.
The first two modes of this game, challenges and choices, are explored through several types of minigames that are named Finding Strength, Setting Priorities, Forming Decisions, Digging Deep, Distancing Yourself, Powering Through, Seeking Focus, Matching Rhythm, Building Resolve, and Finding Comfort.
Oh, no. I thought I had it, but then it really went a weird direction.
In the third mode, surgical interventions have to be achieved by the characters as surgeons.
Oh, my God.
What the fuck?
ER?
Okay. The plot in this game focuses on an outbreak of diphtheria in the hospital. Other subplots are Christina seeking a fellowship despite Derek's bad review.
Grey's Anatomy.
That's good for a point. Game?
Yeah, sounds fun, right?
No kidding.
That's Grey's Anatomy : the video game. Mm. All right, Sarah, released by Fox Interactive in 1994 on the Super Nintendo and the Sega Genesis, this video game, which is based on a comic book, was a side-scrolling beat-em-up with a whopping 44 levels, and it's considered so hard that by the end, you've probably beat up well over 1,000 of the same ninjas to get there, spending 5 hours or so doing that.
Wow.
Griffin Newman played this game to relax while filming the first season of this Amazon Live series. I think that might be Amazon Prime series.
Yes, it is an Amazon Prime series.
Really hard game, beating up ninjas over 44 levels.
Bruce Lee in the jungle? I have no idea. Hint.
This game contains a lot of the characters from the show, such as Chainsaw Vigilante, Paul the Samurai, Chairface Chippendale, and of course, Arthur.
The Tick?
The Tick for a point. All right. This is Jim. Even though it advertised 5,000 bits of trivia, lots of information was reused in this game, such as asking which food has the most sugars, answer the persimmon because it is a fruit, followed a short while later by asking what type of food a persimmon is. Different play modes consist of homeroom challenge, battle of wits, three and out, and schoolroom showdown.
Head of the class.
I love that guess.
Me too.
Hint. You might not be a redneck if you're a contestant on this show, but if you were, you probably quit school at the grade these kids were currently in.
Are you smarter?
Editorializing there, but
are you smarter than a fifth grader?
That was good for a point. All right, can I get the scores, please?
You sure can. It's still a extremely close game. I have 15, Jim has 14, Sarah has 12.
Okay. Everybody's last question coming up, so make it count. So you're in the lead, Tara?
Yep.
And Jim is one behind.
Correct.
Here we go. For Tara. Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay, here we go. Yep. As of 2015, no less than 28 games have been released based on this TV show.
Survivor.
Incorrect. In the first game released for the series, you control one of the main characters of the show through five levels as he tries to ruin the aliens' plans to take over the world.
Star Trek.
Incorrect. Ah! That is...
What is it?
The Simpsons.
Oh, Simpsons.
Oh, wow.
The Simpsons, Bart versus the Space Mutants.
Good grief.
Was that show. All right, so this is to Sarah.
Plot twist.
The main plot of this game is divided into three sections. Section one revolves around an attack on the vice president, while section two covers an attack on the shows main work location. Section 3 covers a major earthquake caused by terrorists to gain access to nuclear weapons at an army base at the epicenter. Kind of makes you wonder why they needed nuclear weapons if they could cause major earthquakes. What's that show?
I was waiting for this show to come up.
This has got to be 24, right?
It's got to be 24.
It is.
You are correct. All right, so now...
Jim needs to get this on 2 points in order to win.
Okay, so what are the actual scores at this moment?
The actual scores at this point, Sarah 14, me 15, Jim has 14.
Okay, Jim. 1 to tie, 2 to win. For this video game, Balladeer Waylon Jennings returns, piping up whenever a mission ends with a death-defying leap or other dangerous situation presents itself.
Dukes of Hazzard.
Yeah!
Dukes of Hazzard for the win.
Congratulations.
Yes. Congratulations. Oh. I've played that game.
Really?
Oh, really? It's so bad. Terrible.
Yeah, it's not good.
I'm kind of interested in a couple of these games that like have like the Desperate Housewives game. That sounds terrible. So. All right, guys, that is it for another episode of Extra. Ah, great. We embarked on a quest for something good to say about Nightfall before going around the dial with stops at Tara's Stand-Up Roundup, Great British Bake Off, and Dark. I debuted the Littlest Hobo recap while Jim successfully pitched us Futurama's Fry and the Slurm Factory for the canon. Tara passed with flying colors the pickle and peanut theme challenge. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Jim, playing for value guests, was the winner of this week's Game Time.
Jim!
Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano,
Freestyle Thrift Store Mini Trampolines,
Sarah D. Bunting,
tell them I hate them,
and Jim Durr.
Now go away, or I will taunt you a second time.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time right here on Extra Talk Radio.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Party on, slurps. Party on, contest winners. Party on.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv podcast network.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.